Radio.com.
Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. School has been in session now for all children for about a week or more, yet some children are having trouble settling in for the new school year. New schools and new school year jitters are age-old problems, but there are other issues, perhaps more serious, that parents and teachers should be aware of. Joining me to talk about that are Dr. Jeff Menzies. He's a doctor of clinical psychology. Chandrea Jackson Saunders, she's a school psychologist. And Mildred Payton, she is the parent of a child whose daughter, her daughter experienced anxiety issues during the first week of school. Lines are open. Give us a call if your children are having anxiety issues, or perhaps it is just the jitters for the first week of school or so. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You're certainly welcome to tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you all for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Jeff, I want to start with you. How do you know the difference between jitters and anxiety when it comes to children going to school? This is, as I said, an age-old problem. You get a first grader going to school, they're crying and falling out in the floor. Second graders, third graders, college freshmen, the whole bit. But, you know, all jokes aside, we've seen this for decades.
Yes, sir. And so, you know, one of the main differences is how severe the falling out is, how prolonged it may be. So if you have a child, first, second, third grader, who the night before school, they can't hardly sleep. You know, they're having trouble sleeping. They're kind of anxious, you know, and when you try to soothe them, there's extra difficulty in soothing them. You know, you can't talk to them about the first day, new friends they're going to meet, you know, how they're growing in advance and they're going to learn so much good information. If that's not soothing them, you know, you may want to ask more specific questions, because sometimes the anxiety can be about anticipated troubles, or it can be recalling past troubles. And so, you know, you want to ask your child, you know, was it something last year that made you nervous about coming to school this year? Because it may be some bullying issues. It may be some issues with a teacher. They may feel like they're not competent enough to learn on the next grade level. And so it's very important as parents to be able to have that dialogue with your children and ask very important questions that kind of dig deeper beyond what might be on the surface.
You've been a school psychologist for quite some time, Chandrea.
Thank you for being kind with those
years. Well, you know, there you go. but that's why you're here, because as the resident sage of this conversation, is this anxiety a new thing, or is this something that has been going on for a long time and now we are having a better understanding of it?
I think the latter. I think it is an age-old issue that children and adults alike have had to deal with as we approach a new school year, or really any new experience. We have become more adept, however, at identifying and recognizing these issues in children. And we've had to, especially in schools where we are tasked with academic excellence, right? Teaching them how to read and how to write and how to do. What we also recognize is the social-emotional impact of their entire experience on the ability of the classroom teacher and school professionals to do that. So when a student lacks motivation or appears restless or doesn't want to volunteer to participate, we have to look at it more than just being a kid who doesn't care or is unmotivated. Those may be some underlying issues with in regards to anxiety. And so it does, the spectrum is vast, as Jeff said. This could be just normal anxiety, normal worry. I'm afraid I won't have any friends. I won't be able to. But it can also extend beyond that to being really scared, fearful of new situations, and therefore not likely to be as academically inclined as they could be.
Mildred, you have two girls, and you have two situations. Briefly tell me about what happened with your oldest, and then, of course, your youngest.
Okay, so my 12-year-old, back in fourth grade, she's now a seventh grader.
She made it. She's okay.
She made it, yes, thank God.
happy ending to the story, but please, let's talk about how she got through that, though.
That's right. Yes. So back in fourth grade, she was experiencing some bullying, particularly with some boys in her classroom where she, they were being sexually inappropriate. So it made her really uncomfortable. So, along with that, it was a young girl who was also bullying her, during, you know, their classroom, time. So along with all that stress that she was going through, she started experiencing chest pains and having a hard time breathing. So the first day she mentioned it, I said, well, you know, how often does it happen? She said, well, it happens while I'm in class. I said, well, did you tell your teacher? She's like, yeah, and she'll tell me to go get a drink of water. So the next day she'll bring it up again, and we just noticed there was a pattern. So we got to the point where I said, you know what, it's time to make an appointment. Let's take you in and get you checked. So it just, she was checked by her pediatrician and a child cardiologist because it just, we just wanted to make sure that it was nothing wrong with her heart or beyond what she was really experiencing. So long story short, what she was experiencing was anxiety from all the pressure and the bullying that was going on, and it was just really overwhelming for her.
How did you finally address that?
I brought it up to the school. I made it, I told her teachers, I informed the principals, and we just went through all the steps of when it started, what triggered it, and how she was feeling and who she was interacting with at the time. So we just made sure we started from the very beginning and just recognized where the problem started.
Did it end once these other antagonistic students were addressed and dealt with?
It sure did. Once it was addressed and they were identified, you know, the school talked to them and their parents, and she was fine after that.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jitters or anxiety. If your children are resisting this new school year, what may be behind it? If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And I should say the doctors are in. So, yeah, you wanted to go ahead and share something with me, Jeff.
Yeah, really quick. So Mildred points out a very, very important point. You know, you didn't just stop at the surface. You know, you actually dug deeper, and, you know, understanding that, you know, children can sometimes parents can be dismissive of children that are expressing themselves. And, you know, if you don't hear anything else tonight, hear that we should be paying our children attention, because no matter how lightweight we think the symptoms may be, I mean, in your daughter's case, it was chest pains, which is serious. Right. But I mean, if they just seem nervous, take that serious, because it's very rare that children are responding to nothing.
Right.
There's absolutely something there. And it's more important to figure out what that something is and find out that it's minor than to ignore that something and find out that it's something major that could literally drive children to take their own lives.
Mm.
That's exactly right.
Now, with your youngest, Mildred, there was a different situation. Tell me about that.
Yeah, with my youngest, so school started last week, and I believe that she was just going through the jitters. So her main concern was, you know, I don't know if my teacher's going to like me. I'm going into the third grade. It's going to get harder. I don't know if I can keep up with the work, especially with the math. And she prides herself in being really, really skilled in her in the math. So she was worried that maybe she wouldn't be able to keep up with the new level of learning. So I talked to her. I said, you know what? You're going to be fine. You're smart. You're just going to have to apply yourself. And everything is going to be okay. And, you know, when you go into the classroom, you make sure you smile, you be respectful, and, you know, you just start the relationship with your teacher that way. But don't go in assuming that your teacher's not going to like you. You know, just you know, be who you are, and everything is going to work out. So we talked through it, and, you know, the very first day she came, I said, how was your first day? She said, oh, it was great. I think he likes me. I said, well, good. So you have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, now go do your homework. But, and that's the other thing, you know, Sean, Andrea, is what Mildred is sharing about her younger daughter, is that common where there are the jitters with young children who are starting, whether it's a new grade or even a new school?
It's common, and it's totally appropriate. Development, you have to look at these things based on the developmental level as to where children are. So, for example, a 3-year-old just entering a formal school setting for the first time. We, in our school settings, we kind of anticipate certain things. So they don't necessarily start the school year at the same time that the upper grade levels start the school. our teachers then or and our educators at that point use that opportunity to go do home visits. The idea is to make that child as comfortable as possible, seeing their face, getting used to them, so that it's not such a traumatic experience when they're walking through that door for the first time. Schools often allow parents to come in and stay for a few minutes just to get kids settled. So those are the normal kind of jitters that we expect. Once a child, however, reaches about the age of 8 years old, those things we don't expect to continue to see. And so if we still see them, we absolutely attempt to address them because we don't want them leading into other issues that are more permanent, like school phobia, school refusal, which is a more appropriate term. And so what Mildred did, she was able to see both sides, the jitters and something probably a little bit more advanced. But the one thing that's common, and I agree with Jeff, what we want parents to understand is don't let that fall by the wayside. Take that as an opportunity, a segue. Open up the doors of those school buildings. Knock on those doors. Talk to teachers, school psychologists like myself, school social workers. We're there to help children and adults transition these roles so that kids ultimately are comfortable and can learn effectively.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about new school years, new school classes. Is your child feeling a bit anxious? Is there a sense of anxiety? Is it just the jitters? How do you know? Let me talk to Tika, calling from D.C. Tika, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
My son suffers with test anxiety, and I would really like to know if anyone there has a number of a psychologist that I can talk with or bring him to. About when my son was in the third grade, he was told by a teacher that this aptitude test that he was going to take was going to determine whether he went to jail or not. And he said this to the whole class.
Let me stop you there, because that is a very, very specific, and I would argue even a different show in and of itself. But the test anxiety is very, very common, isn't it, Jeff?
Very common, very common, and it's brought about by different reasons. And so in this case, it's the actual teacher that's imbuing the children with the anxiety. And it was vicious, it was malicious, and I would dare say illegal, you know, for the teacher to even make that leap. And so too many of our children are sitting in front of assessment specialist teachers or psychologists who have these embedded biases. Some people call them implicit, like it's unconscious. I challenge that. They have these biases, and they put these expectations on our children, and our children react and respond to that energy. And so, you know, and so I would dare to say that your son's current anxiety, the issues that he's having, stems directly from him thinking that messing up in school is going to one day land him in prison. And if he's an African-American young male, which I'm assuming that he is, he has all other types of environmental cues that are also reinforcing that statement and that notion put on him by that teacher. And that teacher ought to be ashamed of himself.
Where should he go for help, Chandrea?
So thanks very much. I was certainly going to suggest to the caller that one of the key things you can do immediately is to reach out to the school personnel. And so I hear Jeff, and I'm very clear that we can't make a wholesale determination about who did what and what the motivations were behind that. But as you know, we are very test driven.
Yep.
That's not a teacher. That's not a student. That comes from the top down a lot. And you hear a lot about test scores, teacher pay, and their evaluations being linked to all this. So it's really a myriad of issues that are related to that. And obviously the child is the one that's at the bottom. So they're the one that's leaned on the most. I would suggest that this caller certainly, you can absolutely leave your information with the program coordinators, and we can help direct you. But I would first contact your school, your principal, your school psychologist, your school counselor. They can absolutely share resources with you in the community that can assist this child and get to the root of what's really going on.
And just remember, the child in this case, based on what you're saying, Mom, is not the problem. The child is a symptom of the problem. If the teacher said that to your child, that's the problem that needs to be addressed. And you have to be, I used to be a school psychologist with DC Public Schools, and I sat on the side of the school, and I found myself in many of these meetings having to advocate with and for the parents, because everybody else around the table is a professional with the school, and the parent was often there left out there by themselves. And so my advice to you, Mom, is that when you go in there and you're talking, make sure they don't flip in and try to say your son has some type of deficit when you're going to address the issue of a teacher pumping fear into your child.
Mm-hmm. Tika, would you mind just kind of hanging on. Our producer can get your information so that we can pass that information on to Chandrea Jackson Saunders, and I'm sure that she will be able to provide you with some resources. So just hang on. They're going to get your information, and we promise that we will help you get through this issue with your son. I need to take a break, but I wanted to let Ayanna know from District Heights that we are going to talk to you next. So please stay with us. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about jitters or anxiety for your young child as they start the new school year. How do you know which one it happens to be? And how do you address these issues? Is it something small or is it something really, really serious? We will be taking your phone calls even after 7:30 at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And as always, the podcast will be on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about new school jitters and anxiety for your young child as they start the new school year. My guests are Dr. Jeff Menzies, Doctor of Clinical Psychology, Chandrea Jackson Saunders, psychologist, a school psychologist, and Mildred Payton. She is the parent of a child who had some anxiety issues during the first week of school. We are happy to report she did get through that. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ayanna, calling from District Heights. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, my name is Ayanna Brandon. I was about to explode. Yes, psychologist, you know why.
Why is that? Share that
because
with us.
It's designed by DNA. They are bad people and they are good people and they are bad teachers. And these children have to face them. And some of these children are not, none of us. Okay, I'm an excited person when I come to mostly everything. Mm-hmm. I have a daughter who's not so excited. She's the complete opposite of me. But she is excited to go to school, but she show it differently. Now, we all have anxiety, you know, when we go into new settings, but some people's anxieties are stressful and some people's anxieties are exciting. It's the difference between the, you know, the feelings of going back to school and meet new people. That's just like us going to a new date, you know. We're going to feel some type of way. So they're going to meet all these new people, 30 kids in the class, hundreds of kids, matter of fact, just all of them. And they're all different. But that psychologist knows by design and our DNA that they are bad teachers.
Yes.
My daughter's teacher last year, she gave my daughter an award and told her that the award that she gets and said it at her graduation that she would be best likely to be living in New York, okay? And only she and I understand what that means.
So it probably was harmless, but not age appropriate.
What did it mean?
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Ayanna, but I do. Yeah. So you may have one person, you know, based on how they answer certain questions. You may be, you may be the person in the class most likely to live in New York. You may be the person who may grow up to be a football player. Right. You may be the person who grows up to.
But that's a cover up. That's not realistic.
What did the New York part mean?
But what did the, help me with the New York thing though.
Right. You trying to clean it up.
No, I mean, I've seen these before, but go ahead. I'm not defending anyone, but go ahead.
Right. Exactly. So me and her, me and this teacher, she was upset because I had believed my daughter. Why? Because I caught the teacher in a lie myself. Right? See, but because they are the teacher, a lot of times they always look like the person that is, you know, doing the right thing. So I'm just saying that those teachers are around, and like my daughter, she's aware of it because she's already had that experience, and I'm sure it's plenty of children out here who are aware of those bad teachers, and they sure going to have anxiety. They're aware of the bad children.
Well, let me stop you there and have my panelists at least attempt to address some of these things, because certainly, yes, there may be bad teachers, there may be bad schools, there may be bad situations, there may be bullying. It could be anything.
Absolutely. And it's also just plain misunderstanding sometimes. And so if I can, I do a workshop and a training for educators, administrators called Assault with the Daily Curriculum. And what it is, it focuses on some of the biases that are embedded in the curriculum and some of the behaviors that administrators and teachers can exhibit that they don't intend to offend but are quite offensive. And so I'm assuming that that's what this situation is about. The teacher may or may not have intended to be offensive, but regardless of their intention, it was offensive. And so sometimes, you know, people got to check themselves or be checked externally. So I hear you, Mom, and please don't explode, you know, because it was what it was, and your daughter felt how she felt, and that's what's important about it. And hopefully y'all went about addressing it in the appropriate manner, and you found some resolve to your situation.
And I think that I want to echo what Jeff is saying. I think that if we all begin at being an advocate for the child, whether we're the child's parent, the child's teacher, the child's principal, the child's nurse or babysitter, if we start there and get on the same page, which usually is due to a lot of miscommunication, some implicit bias, of course. But again, that's when the parents' advocacy for their child and their voice is important. Listen, teachers, doctors, everybody's a person, and there's some flawed individuals here and there. But that certainly doesn't set a wholesale approach for all people who are involved with kids in the school setting. I simply advise, as I advise anyone, if you're an advocate for the child, take the next step, set up the meeting, go into the school, don't run away from the radio, go into that school because you're now that advocate for your child for the next 18, dare I say 30, 50 years of their life, making sure that people are treating them fairly. And of course, hold individuals accountable, no matter who they are, for working with your child. None of us sitting at this table would suggest otherwise.
Ayanna, thank you so much for your phone call. One of the things I wanted to ask Mildred, when your youngest child began to feel what we are now calling jitters, were you concerned that your youngest daughter was having some of the same issues?
I wasn't too concerned because I can sense by her her tone and her demeanor that she was really having jitters again. But I just wanted to, I had to communicate with her to make sure that she understands that, you know, she doesn't have to feel that way. So that's why I made it a point to really check on her that very the next day when she came from school and say, how was everything going? Or how did your day go? But I know with my oldest, that was definitely it was really concerning because she became very restless. She couldn't sleep. She was waking up and during the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. So you can see there was two different. The difference was very clear with their symptoms. So again, with my youngest, I wasn't too concerned. I just knew I just had to talk her through it and just kind of get a better sense of, you know, what was really going on.
Mm-hmm. As a parent now, what have you learned from these two different kinds of situations with your daughters?
what I learned is that you have to always communicate with your children. And like Ms. Chandra said earlier, you know, we can't just ignore the symptoms and think it's just going to be okay. You have to probe and you have to, you know, talk to them. Understand what's causing, you know, this feeling. You know, try to you know, have an open dialogue where you can just get as much information as possible so you can be able to better assess the situation and know what's the next best step you should take for your child.
It's a, you know, another major point that's being brought up now is the difference in personality types of our children. So one child can hear this, two children can hear the exact same thing, and based on their own personalities, they'll take it and respond differently. And so one child might get the jitters from the same situation, another child will have full-blown anxiety and want to totally avoid that situation for the rest of their lives. And so it's very important for us as parents to understand that our children have their own personalities and their own ways of responding to things. And one error that parents might make, and I'm glad you didn't do it, Mildred, you know, you're a highly competent parent, you know, to where you see the difference in their personalities. And based on that difference, you approach your children differently. And too many parents, not too many, I would dare say, yeah, too many parents approach it with a blanket approach to parenting, as opposed to seeing the nuances in their children. And teachers have to do that, like you said, 30 other children. The college said 30, hundreds of children. So teachers have to be able to flip mode in a heartbeat and understand which student can take a New York comment and which one cannot, you know. And so it's very important that we all become more competent as human beings, especially those of us that are responsible for developing other human beings.
Yeah, and family factors absolutely play a role, just like the child's temperament, where an anxious kid may be, you know, kind of tentative and difficult to engage in terms of family, parents, mothers specifically. Sorry about that. You know, just overprotecting their child, not allowing your child to be exposed to stressful situations just based out of fear. Those things kind of inhibit that very natural growth of coping skills that children need in order to navigate life.
But how do I know that we are not overreacting without being dismissive? Because this is why I ask, as we said in the beginning of the program, you may have really young children that have gone from, you know, from daycare, you know, preschool, kindergarten, and now all of a sudden, oh my goodness, clutch the pearls, first grade. Mm-hmm. And so you do have them, and some would say acting out. But that is really, really common. And that may be a common factor even up through first, second, and third. Right. And so I can remember, and you know, you have parents, you better come on and go to the school, right. you know, right. Come on here.
Right. You go on one way or another.
Right, you go on one way or another, and you just have to kind of work it out. But, you know, now, as I said, in the beginning, Chandra, you've got, we have more information.
Yes. Right.
But how do we know that we are not overreacting or being dismissive?
So a couple of, I think, kind of key factors, and Jeff alluded to this in the very beginning, how we differ an anxious child from a non-anxious child. So it's the excessiveness or the atypicality of the child's behavior based on their age and their developmental level. We talked about early on, it's kind of normal for certain things to happen, but up to a certain age, if a kid is still, you know, clenching their parent by the waist and dragging their foot, you know, helping their parent not able to get out the door, then that's a problem. So we know we need to deal with that. It also has to deal with whether it is inappropriate or excessive for the situation on a frequent basis.
What do you mean by that?
So, for instance, we have to look at the whatever action there is it over the top? So there's some things that are normal, but if it happens frequently, or if it happens over a long period of time, and this is kind of like the clinical approach. So you're looking for to a marked degree over a long period of time. How deep does it go? Right. That's kind of like the layman's answer for it. How often are we seeing this? If it happens one or two times and it extinguishes, no problem. But if it's continuous, it goes on and on and on.
What
and
level
on,
of impairment?
Yeah. Then that you're knowing that that is a problem that rises to a level where we now must intervene. So there are kind of markers that someone, an enabled clinician or an able therapist will be able to help that parent see that this is something that's just a jitter. Don't worry about it. Let's put these strategies in place. Or, you know, you're clenching your heart and you're perspiring and your breath rate is rising. Then you know that we have a child who's really experiencing some trauma. And so let's look at this a little deeper. So there are those benchmarks that we can see to distinguish that kind of anxious feeling with the just regular typical behavior that's appropriate.
And I think here's something else, and this is, you know, particularly personal, you know, for me, because when my daughter, who is now here at Howard University, when she was in elementary school, there was the assumption by the teacher that she had test anxiety, because every time she was given a test, a good 5 minutes into that test, she was getting up and going to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And the teacher was mentioning it. And what we discovered, her mother and I discovered, was that it was not test anxiety. It was type 1 diabetes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Medical issue. Right.
And one of those symptoms is frequent urination.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And she being a 10-year-old, her thing was, I got to go to the bathroom.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay. But we were thinking, really? Mm. You know, are you putting the answers on the door in the bathroom? are you going and hoping that the test will go away?
Right.
If you go, and so those are also the kinds of things that it may not be bullying.
Right.
It may not be jitters.
Right.
There may be a medical issue.
Absolutely. Yes. Jeff talked about, you know, he was in the public school system and has since left. Well, me in my 33 years, I'm still there. And I have to say, we have gotten a little better. We've gotten better at looking at children's issues from a holistic point of view. So it just doesn't become about that score or about that academic achievement. We now come to the table. We're required now, because of response to intervention, which is a national law, we're required. If there's an issue that we can't address with a basic universal intervention that usually works for 80% of the kids, a team of people must come together and really look at what's happening with that student. We figure that the teacher by that time has done everything they know to do. So it's not just that teacher's problem. It's my problem as a school psychologist. It's the librarian's problem. It's everyone, including the parent, coming together to see, tease out what's going on. What do you see happening? Let's do observations. Let's get anecdotal notes. Let's do the scheduling. So we would have found out that this wasn't just happening in a test situation. Every so often, this student had to, you know, go get up and go to the bathroom. The nurse is involved. So that's now taking a holistic look at a student, not just one person's problem, a team's problem. And that way you can tease it out a little bit better. And I tell you, when we come to the table and really go through what's going on with a particular child or children in general, generally the heads at the table, including that parent, we're able to come up with a plan that makes sense and that works for that child.
I need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about older children, because this just isn't an issue for the young ones and what we should look for. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are continuing our conversation about first week of school jitters or anxiety. How do you know? How do you address it? I want to talk about older children. And, you know, Mildred, now your oldest is in seventh grade. It's been, what, a week?
Yep, just a week.
How's she doing?
She's doing good. she's trying to adjust to her new classroom and new classmates, because obviously not everyone from the previous year is still in her class. So she's just trying to make some adjustments. But other than that, she's doing well.
I asked you earlier what you learned. What has she learned from her experience way back in the old days of fourth grade?
She learned that, you know, to pay attention to her body. She recognizes when something is wrong, and her body's trying to tell her that something is wrong. So she's very attuned to symptoms and things that she may be feeling, and understanding that she has to tell someone. Even though she might think that we may not take it seriously, but we make it very clear to her that no matter what it is, you have to be able to, you know, just approach us and let us know. And so we're really glad that she doesn't hesitate. And I think that's the big lesson she took away from that experience, that is to always, you know, let my parents know what's going on and pay very close attention to what's happening to my body.
When might we expect, Chandrea, if this becomes another issue, when might we expect it to present itself again in older children? Are we talking about the transition from middle school to high school? Maybe perhaps 11th to 12th grade, what?
So based on research, we see a big jump. We see a big jump from elementary to middle school. So whereas the prevalence is about 10%. In the middle school years, that adolescent stage, where a whole lot of things are happening, not just going into a new school environment, leaving the elementary school behind, but, you know, physically, physiologically, there are a lot of things going on with children. And so all of those hormones, so it's a lot of issues that kids have to go through. And so we do see a greater prevalence of anxiety on the shorter end with the jitters, as well as on the more prevalent end with anxiety disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, separation anxiety disorder with students who are approaching that adolescent stage. And so it can really jump as high as 10%. And what we also have found in the research is that it is more prevalent in girls, almost 2 to 3 times more than in boys. And so all of those things are, I think, are pressing issues. And again, we have to address them in our educational environment. Kids just don't leave school leave home and go back there. There's a great deal of time spent in the school setting, 6, 7, 8 hours a day. And so we have to deal with those issues. So we can't just, again, and I've said this over and over, we embrace this, can't just be focused on the math and the reading. There is so much more going on with children and students that we have to be concerned about. And that's why you see now that there is a focus, which I'm grateful for. School psychologists around the world are grateful for, but especially in DC public schools, we're taking on looking at social emotional learning very seriously, making sure it's a part of the school curriculum, making sure we're telling children about mindfulness, about rest, about breathing, when you're upset, what to do with those feelings. We just have to continue that work so we honor that. And Jeff talked about that earlier. Honor those feelings so they know they have a place for all of that to rest. So I think the middle school age is where you kind of see a great deal of it evolving based on their age.
And see, and I love what you're saying, Chandrea, is that at the middle school transition point from elementary to middle school, because you, again, you're entering puberty, you know, so you have those changes and children have to adjust and get to know their bodies again. It's going through immense changes, but then also going from middle school into high school and then throughout high school, because your social interactions begin to change. Right. You know, you get freedom of mobility now, you know, you know, your parents aren't taking you to play dates anymore. You know, you're venturing out on your own. And then you have all these peer pressures that are starting to rise, where the introduction of drugs, the introduction of sex, the introduction of dating, you know, and all this. And in the age of social media, people swiping left, right, up and down, you know, so children have so much more to be anxious about these days.
Absolutely.
The other thing is that I don't know if it's more prevalent in girls than boys, but what I do know is that it's more reported and more recognized in girls than boys. And I think that boys kind of fly below the radar because we have this different way of posturing when we're anxious about something. We play cool instead of playing scared. We'll withdraw and go quiet on you as opposed to expressive and crying, you know. And so it's just a different way that it manifests itself. But it's very, very, very important, as you point out, Chandrea, is that our schools are starting to jump on board. I would say finally. And what you know, you're bringing up mindfulness. I'm a mindfulness coach and a professional with that. And I teach the meditation to the children. And how do you breathe? You know, how do you control your anxious, your body's anxiety responses? How do you loosen that tension in your chest through breathing? How do you visualize? How do you manifest? I mean, you know, from the athletic realm, to classroom performance to social awkwardness. You know, all of these are areas that our children are finding pressure. And Mildred, you had mentioned something earlier about your daughter, and I immediately thought, like, she's competitive. And I think it was your youngest daughter. You said she was kind of nervous about the teacher not liking her.
Yes,
and then
performing well in math
or whatever. Yeah. And so when you said that, it reminded me that sometimes the energy of anxiety is also motivational energy. Mm. You know, so it can be stressful.
It's
you
good.
Said it
good
earlier.
Stress. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
good
it
stress.
Can be stressful, but it can also be motivating. You know,
yes.
I got just enough nervousness and anxiety that's going to make me step up and make sure that my fears don't come true, because I'm gonna go above and beyond.
And I sense that from her.
I hear
it. Especially
yeah.
after our talk, I said, look, you're very smart.
Yep.
You know, you're just going to have to apply yourself a little bit more, but you're going to be just fine. I just saw the relief in her face, and
yep.
she just like, she took it. She accepted that.
She an athlete?
Naturally, yes.
Yeah.
They're very athletic.
Yep. Mm-hmm. When you get her in the sport, watch her run circles around.
We know what's coming.
Okay, good.
Well, in the last few minutes, and I'll start with you, Mildred, for parents who are listening and wondering, what advice would you give to them?
My main advice is to always listen to your kids, you know, no matter what it is that they're telling you, take the time to really listen and dissect what they're saying. You know, I know most times we're so busy, you know, we live in a fast-paced society and we have our own things going on as adults, but we really have to take the time, carve out time to talk to our kids on a day-to-day, on a daily basis, just so we know what's going on in their world and in their minds. Because sometimes if we tune them out and we're so focused on what we're doing as adults, we can miss those red flags and those telltale sign, and that's what we don't want to do as parents.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, your best advice for mm-hmm. parents,
right.
or and teachers for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you handle the teacher part, Chandra.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
So, in addition to what Mildred is saying, I would also say, just like what Chandra was saying about the team, the holistic approach, get you a council of other responsible adults that you can bounce issues and concerns off of, so that you also are getting more insight than what's coming out of your own head. And you want to make sure that these people that you're seeking advice and insight from are competent. They're not just some drama folks. You know, they're people who have some type of scruples about something. People that you trust. People who in their own lives are able to make good decisions. So that way, you've got you a council, a multidisciplinary team, if
mm-hmm.
you will,
mm-hmm.
the S team, the IEP team, the team that's going to help you to get a different angle on your child's issue. And then we all learn from each other in that circle. It's very, very important. That's the village concept.
Yeah, exactly. Chandra, I'll let you have the last word.
Thank you very much. So there are some strategies that we can use both in school, out of school, at home, establishing predictable outcomes, setting clear and reasonable expectations, breaking down tasks into manageable units, provide opportunities for practice and rehearsal. So guess what? Those are things that we can do across the board that make kids more comfortable, make them more at ease, even with being risk takers. That's the ultimate goal. That's what learning is all about. So now let me talk about the helping professions, the teachers and the advocates within the school setting. It is our responsibility to make sure that parents trust us enough with their children, that they also trust the words coming out of our mouths, mm-hmm. knowing that we are going to be there for their kids in their absence. So we have to continue to work as school professionals to bridge that gap from kids, from parents who mistrust, to teachers who are upset about what they're receiving in those buildings from some of those homes. Because ultimately, we have an opportunity to change this world with these children. And if we're all on the same page working together, understanding that the anxiety varies from child to child. Some of it is good stress, some of it is bad stress. If that child is impressioned by that bad stress, it's going to cause them not to be able to perform where we need them to perform. And therefore, it's in our best interest as well as teachers and educators to be on the same page and make sure that these kids are comfortable learning in an appropriate environment. It's our job.
I think that's a good place to end this conversation. I want to thank all of you for coming in, Dr. Jeff Menzies, Chandra Jackson-Saunders, and Mildred Payton, and good luck to your girls in this new school year.
Yeah.
Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you for having us.
That is the Daily Drum for SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is Monday, September 9th. I'll see you tomorrow. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.